Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Healthcare Business Women's Association Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm an HBA volunteer leader and your host for today's program. Now, I'm so excited about today's program because we're going to be following this podcast with a tweet chat. This will be our first time we're doing this. And I'm going to share more information about how to join that tweet chat at the end of the call. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the HBA, as we call it, the HBA is a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of their female talent. Now, discussion today is entitled Communicating Techniques for Navigating Gender Bias, and this is part three in our series, and it's going to start how to advance your career through self-promotion. And this is the third in the series of podcasts where we explore recommendations from a book called Breaking Through Bias, Communication Techniques for Women to Succeed at Work. And that's by Andrea Kramer and Alton Harris. And it was released in May in 2016. It's Chapter 8. And anyone joining, we included the link to that work on our Blog Talk Radio station page there. You can see it. So joining me today are two guests, Denise Torres, who is our 2015 HBA Woman of the Year. Denise, our Woman of the Year. She's a former female pharmaceutical executive, a speaker, advisor, and motivator. And we also have Christy Oro, and she's the Associate Director of Business Development at Arbor Scientia, and she's a VP of our HBA New York chapter. And returning is our longtime HBA volunteer leader, Linda De Silva, and she's head of she works in business development and of the Life Safety Group, and she's also alliance manager at EMY. And Linda has really spearheaded this series on communication techniques and brought this forward to us. So welcome, Denise, Christy, and Linda.
Thank you very much. It's great to,
thank you.
To have this time with everyone.
Great.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Great. And Linda, you are on, correct?
I am on.
Yay! Right. Linda is here. So let's get started. Linda, during our first podcast, we discussed the Goldilocks dilemma. And can you please refresh our memories about this dynamic?
Sure, I'm happy to, Julie. So, you know, I love this term Goldilocks dilemma because it really characterizes how women are seen. We're either seen as either too tough or too soft, but rarely just right. So when we assert ourselves in an effort to hold the floor, you know, potentially we risk being seen as aggressive or unpleasant, and sometimes not even a team player. Whereas if we give up the floor, then we're likely to be seen as being pleasant and likable, but we're not necessarily qualified for that competitive world of senior leadership. Or do we possess the capability of having those tough conversations? So the only way that we can make the impression of being both strong and likable is through the use of a mix of both agentic and communal verbal and nonverbal behaviors. So when we say agentic, we mean aggressive, assertive, independent, self-confidence. And when we state communal, we mean that nurturing, kind, sympathetic behavior. And what's really they're asking us to do is we need to be more self-aware of how our style is being expressed and, more importantly, how it's being perceived by our colleagues, both male and female.
I get you. You know, I admit that I've had a hard time getting it right, but not only in my professional life, but in my personal life, I really never know that I got it right until I get the feedback. And it continues to be a challenge for me. So, Linda, given the Goldilocks dilemma, what insights do the authors provide on how to help us advance our careers by promoting ourselves?
Yeah, I really love the chapter that the authors did because they provide a very comprehensive overview of gender stereotypes, and I think they put it in the right context. So the typical stereotype for women reveals that we should be modest and unpretentious and diffident, which creates another kind of familiar Goldilocks dilemma. If you conform to the modesty stereotype, when your advancement really depends on actively promoting yourself, your career will stall, quite honestly. But if you forcefully advocate for yourself by highlighting your talents and achievements, you know, you risk your career and social backlash. So if you're too modest, you can't effectively compete. But if you assertively self-promote, you risk a negative backlash. And, in situations in which you need to self-promote to obtain something of value in your career, such as a new job or promotion or salary increase or different work assignment, women are almost always competing for that reward against men. And the men have an inherent advantage over women. So the authors provide perspectives also on social conditioning. And I love this point. Personality attributes for women assume us to be communal. We're described as being affectionate and empathetic, sensitive and warm. And we're concerned with helping others, and we feel more at ease around that. Whereas men are assumed to be agentic. They're aggressive, competent, independent, and perceived as leaders. And as we develop by age 3, girls enforce social equality, and we avoid showing higher status by avoiding commands and boasts. And as a result, girls are far more likely to be modest and conceal their achievements and goals more so than boys. And because of this early conditioning, many women find self-promotion quite uncomfortable. They feel that they're showing off or they're behaving in a very conceited and unfeminine way. And then second, women learn very early that claiming social power or superiority, it triggers criticism by others. Like, you know, how many times have we seen kind of women talking about other women when somebody really tries to stand up? So when a woman calls attention to her talents or accomplishments or ambitions, she really does risk backlash by being stigmatized or isolated or even penalized for violating kind of the modesty stereotype. But when self-promotion is not only, but when we're self-promoting, it's not only permitting, it, no, I'm sorry, but when self-promotion is permitted and expected, women feel safe to promote themselves and are entirely capable of doing it as effectively as men. You know, and the interesting part is the traditional male stereotypes for self-promotion, I love this, you know, allows men to blow their own horn loudly and frequently, and they can claim personal credit for even team achievements and routinely characterize his achievements and abilities and potential as great and exceptional and unique. So he can ask for what he wants in a very assertive, even challenging way. And when he does, he's likely to be recognized as being hard-charging and with a good sense of self-worth. But if a woman acted in this manner, she would be seen as being pushy and conceited and not a very nice person. So she should never be loud and aggressive and kind of in your face.
Oh, wow. Well, I got to really work on that myself. So, but that's, yeah, you know, that's
a great
certainly
chapter.
A mouthful there. It's really, so, you know, yeah. I can say it's really interesting and I can relate to those stereotypes. I approached a manager once about a well-deserved promotion, provide a list of accomplishments, ways that I could contribute at a greater level if I were promoted. And this male manager said to me, "You should be more like Mary X. Just do a good job and you'll be recognized with a promotion." And I was shocked and disappointed his response, and then that he compared me to another colleague that I thought he thought I should model her behavior of being modest and sitting there like a good little girl. So I hear you. So Denise, have you witnessed this dynamic during your career and rise to senior leadership roles?
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of, you know, being too aggressive, et cetera, I can't say I received too much of that feedback. But, you know, have I seen other people operate in that way? Of course. And have I seen the impact of that? Absolutely. You know, I have seen that same standard, though, applied to men sometimes. I think a couple things come to mind when, you know, when I hear this. One is our job is not to be liked. And sometimes we're going to ruffle some feathers. It's just that we can't consistently go over the top when we're talking about accomplishments. And there are many ways to go about getting recognized without being the wallflower or the, you know, 100% table banger. And, you know, it's really, and how do we, and I know we'll get into this, but how do we learn some of the skills and tools and, you know, put things in our toolbox so that we're ready to share things that we have done, whether it's things as part of a team or whether it's something that we have led. And there are definite tools, depending on the culture. I do want to emphasize something. Every culture is different. And so understanding the culture you're in, you know, within your company and your group is really important.
Absolutely. I think that that's part of it. And it's like, as you've mentioned in the past, it's something that you constantly have to observe and work on to get it just right. So, Christy,
and
you know,
I
what
don't,
addition?
Can I just add maybe one thing and then we'll go to Christy?
Yes.
I think getting it just right is, you know, looking for a needle in a haystack. And I think, you know,
yeah.
what, we just need to be in the zone. Sometimes we're going to step out of the zone. That's okay. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's being more consistently in a zone of it's not shocking to people. Because that's the thing. Even if people are a little bit uncomfortable, it's okay. It's when we get over that line where it's like, darn, Denise, that was like too much. And when your
mm-hmm.
colleagues start to think that was too much, you know, then you know you have to self-assess. But I don't want to give the opinion to people. And, you know, some of this is that you have to get it just right. You know, who's
mm-hmm.
perfect that way? And who can try to read everyone's mind at the same time that you're trying to get a point across? You know, it's that's too much pressure on women.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Denise. I mean, you know, it's knowing where you are in your career and the people that you're with. If you're still unknown, if you're new to the group, you know, you have to be a little bit more cautious. But if there's a tenured group, you know, you've got a little bit more, you've got career credibility and credentials, and you can be a little bit more of a risk taker. But when you're kind of new to a group, you know, people form impressions very quickly, and I just think you've got to know the circumstances and the surrounding and the people in the room to know when to take that risk.
Absolutely. Christy, what additional insights can you share to help us advance our careers from your personal experience?
You know, as I'm listening to this, I'm, you know, mid-level in my career and hearing Denise talk about looking at the culture, and every culture is different. And then even to Linda's point, whether you're new or more tenured within your organization, I think all play key roles in how you assert yourself. You know, I was recently promoted, and part of what, you know, part of that was my own doing. You know, I had been with a company for 3 years. I was watching different people get promoted, and I said, hey, why am I not being promoted? And actually asked and directly said, what do I need to get there? So between my former boss and his boss, I had two different answers of what I needed to get to the next position. And so it was a matter of saying, okay, you know, this person says one thing, this person says another. So I did very similar to you, Julie. I made my list of things that I had done in the last in the past 3 years to say, okay, this is what I have accomplished. This is what my initial goals were. This is how I went above and beyond. And then it was almost a no-brainer. But if I was newer to the organization or even within a different organization, I don't necessarily think I would have had the same outcome. So I would definitely agree with, you know, Denise and Linda that you really have to know your culture. You have to know and understand who the key players are. And then whether or not you're newer to the organization or tenured, I think makes a big difference as well.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. So, Linda, what did the author suggest women do to approach promotion, self-promotion? What are the tools that we can use?
The authors suggest that a woman's the most effective approach is both agentic and communal, involves kind of three elements. So one is exactly what Christy said. You've got to make a very clear, strong, supportive case for yourself, like what are your qualifications, your talents, your accomplishments, you know, in a manner that really holds their attention. Again, what value does it bring to the organization? What are the results of the actions that you've taken? The next is you need to make this case as inviting or non-confrontational. You know, that kind of theme of I'm on your team, so that you come across as being very competent and likable and confident and warm and competitive and friendly. It's kind of, you know, showing both sides of it. You know, they suggest maintaining a very pleasant facial expression, a very even tone, relaxed, direct body position, because you really don't want to come across as being combative about this. And then the third point was that you really need to score enough goals to even the score with your male competitors, and then using another score to win. So when you claim credit for an accomplishment, you know, you want to show a balance using the I and we to demonstrate that you're a team player, but don't appear being angry or aggressive or emotional. you know, it shouldn't be one of those discussions like, you know, I'm waiting now. Isn't it about time that, you know, I should be promoted? And that's happened to me once or twice in my career, too, because at what point do you start to stand up for yourself because you realize you're being looked over, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the other issue is, and this has happened to me as well, a lot of the promotions that I've gotten in my career were not your typical promotions. They were situations where something wasn't formally asked of me. It was through my relationships or discussions I had with people that these opportunities became available to me. So don't always think that there's a formal process. Always be on the lookout for some of these quick opportunities or these discussions, and that's why it's so important to have this network and to let people know that you're looking for growth opportunities inside the organization. But then be prepared when somebody says, yeah, there's this opportunity, you've got to present yourself. You've got to present your strengths, your capabilities, and your achievements. So kind of always be on the lookout. And mm-hmm. I would always say, you know, be very prepared, right, about your, mm-hmm. not only the message, but how you're going to communicate that message.
Absolutely. And, Linda, I want to add on top of that, sometimes you can put new opportunities forth that you create yourself that really shows that you understand the organization. Create a role.
Yeah.
Take it to your manager. And that's, again, the best way to get a promotion is create a new job. Right?
Right.
One that's
going
to provide value. So, yep.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I've got some closing comments. Denise, do you have anything further to add?
You know what, I want to make sure we balance all of this with not putting such a burden on women that we are, every time we talk, it's like a science. I think, you know, some of this men need to own, other women need to own, and I guess what I would recommend to you guys, you know, it can be done. And let me just tell you from my own, you know, career standpoint, you know, I led two large companies, had a transformation. I retired at 58, very financially well off. And, you know, I'm going to tell you guys something. You have to be bold. You have to be bold, and you're going to take a lot of crap. That just comes with the territory. You're a female, male, whatever. You know what? It's hard. It's hard, guys. But you know what? As women, it is harder. And what you have to do is really be confident in yourself. Being confident in yourself is probably the, you know, one of the most important things that we can do. When we're confident and when we have energy, you know what happens? People want to be around us. When we project something as lack of confidence, but we're boasting, who wants to be around that? Now, I on purpose told you about my background. I bet none of you thought, well, gosh, Denise is really a jerk. Right? What the hell did she mention that for? But the thing is, if I'm telling as part of a story, when I led companies, I would often, like one of the things I would do is always put together a story of what we had accomplished. Sometimes I'd make it as a form of a video and show it to senior leadership. It was a, you know, it was a different way of celebrating our successes. So, you know what, I do, if I could leave a point here, I actually want you to be more comfortable with you being who you are. That natural confidence will come across, making it easier to have succinct conversation. When we're not confident, we ramble. To have succinct conversation, you know what, to say things, you know, with a smile, to have a sense of humor, and I think to be more of ourselves. But anyway, those are some thoughts that I wanted to share.
Great. Thank you. Christy, any closing remarks from you?
So, Denise, I love to be confident in yourself. And for somebody who is mid-level in their career, I think one of the things that I've learned, especially through HBA, is that when you start to have your self-doubt, phone a friend, you know, and say, this is what I'm looking to do. I need a gut check. And there's people out there like Linda and Denise, you know, Shannon Resetich has been a huge confidence builder for me as well, that when I started to have self-doubt, and needed that confidence boost, to be able to present myself in the way that I needed, that you all have been there, and it's been a great experience. And to Linda's point, as far as being on the lookout for new opportunities, I mean, they come in some mysterious ways sometimes. You know, I am currently in a position where my former boss had left the company, and so I didn't look at it as, oh, crap, now what? I looked at it as, oh, hell yeah, I have this opportunity now that he's no longer here, so I'm going to take that initiative to say, you know what, I want that job, and what do I need to do to get there? So, you know, always be on the lookout for opportunities as well.
But I think what was so cool about you doing that, Christy, was that when you, you know, had that conversation, you were really confident in yourself, and you expected the answer to be yes.
Yes, and I phoned a few friends and said, hey, I need a little bit of confidence here, and they gave it to me, and that's what really kind of helped drive that forward.
Yeah, I think, Christy, you did all the right things to prepare, right? The more you prepare, rehearse, talk to people, think through it, you're ready to have that conversation, and you can do it in a much more relaxed, comfortable, natural way than if you're not prepared, because it comes across.
Yeah, whatever it takes for you to be prepared. And also, remember, it's times at bat. Sometimes you're going to do something, you're going to take a big swing even though you practice, and it's a big whiff. It might happen a second time, a third time. What do? You get back up at bat. And that's what's key, guys, is like, you know what, when you try something, you run into a brick wall, you got to find another door. So, you know what, it is a matter, you know, the topic last week at HB about resilience and grit, it's a matter of getting back up. And you know what, that's a lot of practice. But yes, you can. Yes,
right.
You can.
The one thing I'd like to kind of add to the conversation, too, is I think we have to be very realistic where we want to invest our career. And I think evaluating the company that you're with, either the division or department or group or whatever, you need to ask the question, is this a female-friendly environment? Because quite honestly, I've been at my first job,
sure,
from being a pharmacist to a sales rep, the first pharmaceutical company I worked for, there was only one female district manager. Now, this is, you know, 25, 30 years ago, but there was only one female district manager, and her territory was around the corporate headquarters. And that sent a clear message to me that this was a good old boys company. And I did a year and a half, 2 years there. I got it under my belt, but I left because I felt like I shouldn't invest my career in a company that doesn't embody women. So I think we need to ask those questions about where is women, you know, what percentage are on their boards and senior leadership, and are they a female-friendly environment? Because otherwise, why should we invest years waiting for something to happen? You know, so I would kind of ask that question, too. I think we should be very mindful of the companies that we choose to work for about their culture, especially around promoting women. That's my last 2 cents.